Welcome back, Creepaholics crew. I'm your host, Shanice, and for tonight's episode, we have a story you're not going to want to miss. So we are here to talk about a man who killed his whole family and claims it's all because of his house. Now, if you know the story, then you know what I'm talking about. But if you're new to the history of the Amityville Horror House, then there's a movie based on what happened. But in this beautiful home, the movie doesn't cover what actually happens. Let's creep into it, shall we? The Amityville Horror House was built in 1927 at 112 Ocean Avenue. The home was a three-story waterfront home with five bedrooms and a basement, according to the listing. A Long Island estate with white shutters on the windows, white lattice on the side of the house, and a white sign that stood out front of this wonderful house that read, High Hopes. It was a vintage home, but no one would forever know how darkened this house would be for the gruesome murders that would be dealt from Ronald J. DeFeo Jr. He was 23 years old and would commit these murders on the property that he lived at. Many movies have been made about what had happened, but they depict a different story. But we're here to talk about the events that actually occurred that night, not the movie story. In the very early morning of November 13th, 1977, Ronald would tragically murder his entire family. Ronald DeFeo Jr. was a normal man in the beginning. The DeFeo family appeared to be a normal, fun-loving family. They lived in Long Island during the 1970s. In the family was Ronald DeFeo Sr., Louise DeFeo, and their five children, Ronald Jr., Don, Allison, Mark, and John Matthews. They lived in the part of Long Island called Amityville. The home was also equipped with a swimming pool and a nearby boat dock. Inside the house hung a life-size portrait of the entire family. It was on the wall. One of the local girls told the Times magazine that Ronald DeFeo Sr. had given her rides most of the time to her family's restaurant in Brooklyn. Another neighbor would claim that the DeFeos befriended her after her husband had passed away. This was said by Catherine O'Reilly. They were kind and loving people, she would say. But on the outside, they looked normal. But behind closed doors, there was another story that would be told. Ronald Sr. worked at an auto dealership, which gave the entire family a lavish lifestyle. Instead of money coming from Louise's father, Michael Bernagonti, who had bought the family the home at 112 Ocean Avenue, so they could move out of their small Brooklyn apartment. Michael also gave his son-in-law $50,000 to have the family's portraits painted for the home, which Ronald Sr. did. Even though the DeFeos had a luxurious home and a wealthy lifestyle, Ronald Sr., also known as Big Ronnie, would show off for what he had. But in truth, he wasn't the one who bought it all. Big Ronnie was reportedly known to be abusive and violent to other men. Most of the time, his anger and frustration would be taken out on his eldest child, Ronald Jr., who was nicknamed Butch. As Butch grew up, he struggled to find a good relationship with his father. He was also bullied at school. Kids would make fun of him for being overweight and not the popular type. They would use names like Pork Chops and the Blob. By the time he became a teenager, he had lost most of his weight. He would soon become a person known to problems. He became prone to using alcohol as a coping mechanism. At one point, while Butch and Big Ronnie were fighting, he would pull a gun on his father, but didn't shoot. Butch also worked with his father at the family sealership, but he would rarely show up to his shifts. Instead, he would spend most of his time doing drugs, drinking, and getting into fights with his parents. But still, no one suspected him to be involved in the murders of his own family. On the night of November 13th, 1974, Ronald DeFeo Jr. would commit the famous Amityville Horror murders. He would shoot his father in the head with a 35 caliber Marlin rifle as he was sleeping. He would then turn the gun on his mother, Louise DeFeo, and shoot her as well. The 23-year-old would then proceed to the bedrooms of the children, where his siblings slept. He would then murder 18-year-old Dawn, 13-year-old Allison, 12-year-old Mark, and little 9-year-old Jonathan Matthews with the same weapon he killed with his parents. After Ronald Jr. killed his entire family, he then proceeded to take a shower, getting dressed, then attempted to clean up all the evidence he had left of the crime he had just committed. He then would head to the work that he worked with his family at. But on the way, he would throw all of the evidence and supposedly the gun down the storm drain, and then would continue with his day as if nothing was wrong, and would pretend not to know why his father was not at work. As the day went on, he would decide to leave his work to create his alibi by hanging out with friends that afternoon. He would also make sure to mention he couldn't get in touch with his family and pretend to be worried. He would then proceed to a nearby neighbor, or bar, as they would put it, to scream for help, yelling, "Someone had shot my family! They murdered them!" and begged for somebody to come back to the house and help him. The people who did go were horrified upon the crime scene. Each member of the DeFeo family was discovered laying face down in their beds with fatal bullet wounds. As they investigated, they would all know that they were shot with a 35 caliber, and it was a level action Marlin 336-6C rifle. The time they were shot was around 3 o'clock in the morning. Both parents had been shot twice, but the children had only been shot once. The physical evidence would suggest that Louise and her daughter Allison were awake at the time of their deaths. When police had first arrived on the scene, they said they were surprised to find an in-shocked Ronald Jr. waiting for them. He would claim to the authorities that arrived on scene and proceed to tell them he believes his entire family was targeted by the mob. At first, it seems like the cops believed him and would proceed to take him into protection as precaution. But as the investigation went on, they realized. Nothing he was saying was lining up with the evidence. At first, DeFeo, Ronald Jr., would say he went to work, then hung out with some friends in the afternoon, and claims he couldn't have killed his family because he wasn't home. But police would then tell him, they know that the murders happened at 3 a.m. You would have been home, and clearly not at work. Ronald Jr. would then mention a notorious mob hitman, who he says killed his entire family. But police were able to actually confirm that this man was out of state at the time of the murders. It would be the next day that he would finally break down and admit he had killed his family. And Ronald Jr. DeFeo says, once I started, I just couldn't stop. It went so fast. In October 1975, the trial would begin. This crime would be a massive media coverage. And attention towards the trial, it got some much-needed attention, which was not good at the time. But it was because of the sheer brutality of the murders and the unusual details within the case that they just could not resist. In surrounding the DeFeo's defense, his lawyer had built a case around him. So his lawyer claims that DeFeo Jr. was an insane man and claims that he only killed his family in self-defense because of the demonic voices he heard in his head. Even though the defense tried hard to prove it, in the end, Ronald DeFeo Jr. would be convicted of 6 counts of second-degree murder in November. He would later be sentenced to 6 consecutive years of 25 years to life in prison. But it doesn't end there. The story of the Amityville murders didn't make sense. Like, for one thing, authorities could not figure out how he managed to kill 6 people in their beds with no signs of struggle. Also, how did none of the neighbors know? All the neighbors that lived around the house did not hear any gunshots, and there was no silencer present at the time of the murders. DeFeo Jr. did claim that he apparently drugged his family at dinner, but that would not coincide with the time from dinner to the time that it took to murder everyone at 3 a.m., which was the time of the shooting. So if they had dinner between, let's say, 5 or 6, and the shooting was at 3 a.m., even if you were drugged, minimum after 8 hours, you would wake up. And also, too, if the mother and daughter were awake at the time of the shootings, why did they not show any signs of struggle? How did they get back on their bodies, like face down, in their beds, with no sign of struggle? That's something the police do not know. Another thing that people could not make sense of is he had a problem with his father, so that motivation to kill makes sense. But why would he kill the rest of his family? DeFeo Jr. would proceed to talk about his killings in jail, but it never would establish any light on the haunting mystery. In December 1975, a new family would move in to the home of the old DeFeo residence. The family was George Lutz, his wife Kathy, and their 3 children. But shockingly, after 28 days, they would flee from the property in terror. They claimed it was haunted with the spirits of the DeFeo family. George Lutz would claim green slime was oozing from the walls. The windows suddenly shattered onto the floor. Family members allege they would wake up levitating in their beds, claiming they would have no acknowledge of how it happened. And there were sounds that would sound like straight out of a horror movie. George Lutz was actually played by James Brolin in the 1979 film The Amityville Horror. Later in 1977, Jay Anson would publish a novel titled The Amityville Horror, which was based on the events that the Lutz family claims they endured on the property. It talks about the paranormal activity that happened within the home of 112 Ocean Avenue. It would be in 1979 that the movie would release titled The Amityville Horror. Released on July 27, 1979, it's 118 minutes long. This supernatural film is directed by Stuart Rosenberg, starring James Brolin and Margaret Kidder as a young couple who just purchased a home that's haunted by combative supernatural forces. A remake was made, and it was produced in 2005. Now in the movies, you see a secret room in the basement with a man who used to live there that killed natives. But that's just a movie. That's not the actual events. The Amityville murders would have new evidence that raises questions. A documentary filmmaker named Ryan Katzenbach, I may have said that wrong, excuse me, he believes that there's more to this crime. He claims this crime did not happen the way it is commonly accepted. He says, new evidence suggests there was a second shooter. He says, we firmly believe there was indeed a second gunman involved in the commission of this crime. Ryan Katzenbach is creating his third documentary about the murders. He insists his documents and the evidence that he has will prove it. Ryan hired a team of underwater archaeologists who actually found a gun in the canal behind the house, which was not searched. Mark Padover told CBS New York that once we cleaned it off, you could see that there was a trigger and a handle. Padover said the gun was immediately turned over to crime labs of the FBI for a forensic ID. Katzenbach claims with this new evidence, it will confirm DeFeo did not act alone. He needed help to kill all six people. Ryan had always questioned how one single person could have committed all six murders. He says, how could a person walk through a three-story Dutch colonial and shoot six different victims on two separate levels, and no one got out of bed? No one puts up a struggle. Other evidence and details about the case adds up to a second shooter. Evidence like a photograph of a pillowcase found in the trash bin next to the canal. We know that DeFeo had used pillowcases in the cleaning up of the crime, said Ryan. The police said that DeFeo used a pillowcase to carry the rifle and other incriminating evidence that he took from the home, but claims he tossed it in the storm drain, not the canal. When the police checked, they found his holster, but they did not find his handgun. Ryan said that the missing gun is the one the team had pulled out of the canal. Ryan also claims the details from the 1974 police report points to the possibility that someone else had actually helped in the killing of the DeFeo family. Eyewitness reports and crime scene photos and the handwritten notes all add up to a second gunman. The Suffolk County Police aren't convinced. Detective Lieutenant Gerald Pilofsky, homicide chief, says people aren't very creative, and the internet allows them to pull up items that they think are facts, when in facts, they're not facts. But Ryan maintains that the evidence was overlooked, and the police found a suspect and confessed, so they put it to rest. Ryan says, it's a very famous case for Suffolk County. DeFeo had been sitting in prison for 37 years now. To open up this case, to give a chance for DeFeo to get a new trial, just don't think that's the route they want to go. The gun is still being examined by the crime lab, but with decay and lack of a serial number, it may be impossible to identify. Ronald DeFeo Jr. died on March 12, 2021 at Albania Med, located in Albania, New York, in the United States. Now that DeFeo is dead and the gun may never be determined, we may never know what really happened at 112 Ocean Avenue at the Amityville Horror House. Only time will tell. Thank you so much, everyone, for tuning into my podcast. I really hope you have enjoyed the episode of the Amityville Horror. Please go and check out the movies and actually go read the book, because honestly, when I was a child growing up, between Amityville Horror and Annabelle, those were my childhood movies. Trust me, you want to check this out. So that is all I have for you. So as you actually look in the movies, it's actually the father who goes crazy and shoots the children. But in the real life story, it is actually Ronald DeFeo Jr., not Sr., who kills his entire family and tries to cover it up. If there's a second shooter, only time will tell. We may never know, we may know. With forensic science these days, who knows? Maybe we come upon this exciting new evidence, but that's all I have for you right now, guys. And I really hope you enjoyed my story, but also shout out to Nikki Gardner for liking my podcast and messaging me on Facebook. If you guys want a shout out too, send me a message, email, or shout out on Patreon to let me know that you are listening. Thank you so much for everybody who has listened on all my podcast platforms. Also, don't forget to check out my YouTube channel at Creepaholics. We also have a Facebook page, and we also have a website at wordpress.com/creepaholics. If you love my content and, you know, just want to stick around, don't forget to hit that like button and subscribe button. I'm your host, Shanice, and thank you all so much for tuning in. Keep creeping it real, Creepaholics crew.
Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.